Pete Hamill is a novelist, editor, screenwriter, and one hard-boiled journalist who knows how to write a story. Hamill was born in Brooklyn, the first of seven children of Catholic immigrants from Belfast. He had his first newspaper job at age 11, delivering the Brooklyn Daily Eagle. In the summer of 1960, Hamill went to work as a reporter for the New York Post. In 62, a prolonged newspaper strike led him to write magazine articles. By the fall of 63, he was in Europe as a correspondent for the Saturday Evening Post. He returned to New York in August 64 and worked at the New York Herald Tribune as a feature writer. In the fall of 65, he began writing a column for the New York Post. By Christmas of that year, he was in Vietnam. His newspaper career would go on for decades at The Post, New York Daily News, The Village Voice, and New York Newsday. He served briefly as the editor of The Post and later as editor-in-chief of The Daily News. He is the author of 20 books. Today we're going to speak to Pete about Tabloid City, his drama of one fateful day in the city of New York. Welcome, Pete. Thanks so much for stopping by the Book Report.
Thanks for having me.
Your book has it all. Tabloid City, a disgraced hedge fund manager, an Iraq war vet seeking revenge, angry extremist, and a young, ill-informed newspaper publisher who decides to turn the newspaper into a website. For inspiration, I'm guessing you don't have to look much further than the front page.
Or the interior pages, too. Or the masthead, with the names of the bosses.
I worked at the Miami Herald for 15 years, and I worry about newspapers as much as I'm sure you do.
I do, because I think if we lose them, and that's one of the underlying themes in this book, if we lose them, we're losing a sense of the local that's absolutely necessary out of a newspaper, particularly in a world of cosmic coverage of everything. And we lose some of the work that we can do that is of amazing value to people who've been knocked down and can't get up, and we can help them. People who've been injured by the society and the government can't quite function well. We can do that. We can give voice to the voiceless. We can help people function in this amazing country better. And if we lose that, it'll be an emptier country.
I've often wondered, I mean, a television station would never do the kind of enterprise story that takes months and sometimes years to finish. I mean, what is our society going to do without that, if it should come to that?
Well, it won't do anything, which is what I'm most afraid of. There's nobody going to stand up and say, "Occupy NBC." You know, it's not going to happen. But we'll be a more impoverished country than we've ever been, because the sense of being able to speak in this country, those of us reporters who've worked in dictatorships know that they become whispery little graveyards for human beings. And here we're able to yell or talk or write poetry about the things that most concern us. And if we lose that, we're a diminished country.
All right, on to your book. Why the title Tabloid City?
Well, because of the tabloid is what I've worked on all my life, the Daily News, the New York Post, other tabloids. And it's a tabloid is the shape of the paper, basically. It was invented in this country in 1919 and became the great newspaper form for people who rode subways. You couldn't unfold the Times in all of its complex glory on the A-train. So it was a populist form, which didn't mean it was like the supermarket tabloid. The supermarket tabloid is all about, first of all, some of it's paid for with sources, which none of us ever did. But it gets excited over the wrong things. I worked on tabloids where great people worked, from photographers like Ouija to writers like Nora Ephron and Mary Kempton and others, you know, really top-flight people. And their standards were very high. And they helped in that way give the readers a sense of belonging to this country, because many of them were immigrants. My father became an American. He's an Irish immigrant from Belfast. He became an American once he got baseball. He didn't get baseball by reading the Federalist Papers or de Tocqueville. He got it from the sports section of the New York Daily News. And so did many, many others do the same thing in the same process. So I think if we lose that, we're losing something. For example, just in the case of the current immigration from Mexico in a place like New York, the tabloid is going to tell those young Mexicans what this city is about, but it's going to tell the larger city what the Mexicans are about. And it's a two-way process that makes us stronger in the end. It makes us say, you know, here we are. Don't try to budge us.
Your books capture such a sense of place. Lately, I've interviewed several writers who think that an author can write about a place by visiting Google Earth. What do you have to say about that?
I think you can write about a computer, but not about... I'm a strong believer in using all the senses, smell, touch. Things. Smell, for example, can't be done by television. It can't be done by a computer. You have to be aware of it, and you can convey it with language in certain ways. But to give a sense of what it is like in the place you're going to. So I tell young reporters at NYU, you want to be a reporter, get out of the house. Go to the second floor left in the tenement after the fire and find out what the damage was. Get out.
In your book, the clock seems to play such a big part. Sections are divided into hours and minutes. How did you make that decision? It certainly gives it an amazing sense of urgency.
Because I lived it. You know, newspapers are done against deadlines. You can't say, I need 3 hours more to finish this piece. You know, they take your chair away. One of the great advantages of working on a newspaper for young writers is they learn how to be accurate and how to work against time and space to some extent, because there's only a certain amount of space. So they can get more exact and more precise against a deadline. And that sense of the clock ticking is also because I'm old. But, you know, there's a certain other kind of clock that ticks away after a certain age. But I think that sense of the clock ticking always has been with me since I became a newspaper man 50 years ago.
So what project are you working on next?
A new novel, partly set in New York, obviously, in Sicily. So I managed to get 5 weeks in Sicily earlier this year. And somehow, the first Irishman since the end of World War II to go to Sicily for 5 weeks and lose weight just by walking around.
That's a story in itself. I was going to remark, you look very slender.
Just keep walking, that's all. So that I'm about halfway through that, and I'll retreat in January somewhere and finish it.
Mm. And is there a working title for that?
Not yet, no. Mm. I usually don't come up with a title. The first title I come up with is usually horrible. So until you finish it, you can pick a phrase out of somewhere in the book and hope for the best.
Yeah. How do you think New York is doing 10 years after 9/11?
On some levels, much better. For example, I think race is much better in New York right now. Because September 11th was indiscriminate. Everybody died. Christians, Muslims, Jews, Mexicans, and also black people and white people. They all died. It was something that truly brought people together in a way. I always say September 12th was the most important day because people got up and went to work, which is the most important four-letter word in New York and elsewhere. Obviously, the collapse in 2007 and the economic thing is not helping matters. The last year, guns have come back. 18-year-olds are killing each other over nonsense. again. And that hadn't happened for a long time. I'm apprehensive about where it might go, depending on whether this thing worsens or gets better. Because a city that's working doesn't have certain problems. A city that creates, as we learned in the 60s, if you create the person with nothing to lose, you're going to be in trouble. So I'm apprehensive about that. But I think on the level of recuperating from the horror, and I was there that day and from the first moments and was there for the anniversary, that the building is going up is itself astonishing. And the fact that Occupy Wall Street is happening a block and a half from all that, right around the corner from Brooks Brothers, by the way, in Zuccotti Square, shows that there's also some other kind of energy working that could be negative or could be positive, depending on where it goes.
Thank you very much.